This week's conversation with Natalia Frank is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America. Registration is open now for the 2022 National Seminar Broadway Bound. The event is August 24 to 28 at the New York Marriott Marquis Hotel in New York City and will feature 4 days of exciting classes for a variety of experience levels. The boutique for Broadway Bound is Needleworker's Delight, located in Metuchen, New Jersey. Needleworker's Delight provides a wide spectrum of materials for our needleworking needs. They have provided boutiques for regional seminars and are the hosts for various needle fests in the eastern states. Registration for Broadway Bound ends June 15, so act quickly. For more information, go to egausa.org and search events for National Seminar 2022. Thanks to EGA for sponsoring the show, and now on to our conversation with Natalia Frank. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artists. Our artist this week from Natalia's Fine Needlework, Natalia Frank. Natalia, welcome.
Well, thank you. Hi, everyone.
Good to have you with us here. This has been looking forward to this one because we get to talk about Petit Point and Dollhouse Needlework. All right, so you just did the big Dollhouse show.
Yes, I just came back from the. It's called Bishop Chicago International Dollhouse Show, and it's the biggest dollhouse show in the States, and they have it each April each year, and a lot of different artisans and miniaturists, fans come to the show and enjoy it. All three full days of the show. And actually, the show started last Monday with the classes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, I got to know about this stuff. I have a personal interest. I built a dollhouse from a kit for our daughter a long time ago. So, went to the trouble of actually building it. It was just a cheap one. But she still has it, and so then buying the furniture ended up being much more expensive than the house kit. So this show is it people showing off dollhouses? Is it all the furnishings, or is it just a complete mixture of everything?
This is a complete mixture of everything. You will see high end miniatures, dollhouses, room boxes. Everything what you furnish your real dollhouse or real house with, you will see at the show. Lamps, food, bed linen, you name it. Everything. Birds, flowers, trees, pottery.
People make pottery everything. For dollhouses?
Absolutely.
Holy smokes.
You need to attend this show one day just to see with your own eyes.
Wow. Well, that's what I was going to ask. So is it held in the same location every year?
Yes, it's in Chicago Marriott O'Hara Hotel each year. And you never heard about it living so close?
No, I never have.
Oh, wow. I think more than 40 years.
Wow.
Each year, yes.
Because, I mean, when we lived in Illinois, it was 20 miles away from O'Hare, so you'd think I would have picked up on that somewhere. Yeah. All right, I assume it's a big exhibit hall, and then it's classes and seminars, people talking about how to make dollhouses, how to wire them, how to furnish them, the whole bit.
I would correct you. It's three big ballrooms.
Wow.
I believe this year they had more than 240 dealers.
Wow.
Oh, that is a lot.
Yes.
And so they set
up booths. Very interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they set up booths to to sell the finished product, or can you buy things to make yourself?
At this show, you buy finished product. Mm-hmm. And yeah, high-end finished products.
Okay.
Wow. Oh, man, and I was 20 miles away for how many years? Oh.
Well, now you know, and next year you're welcome there.
Yeah, now it's a six-hour drive.
Absolutely.
Now.
it's an amazing experience. You don't want to miss it.
No.
Just once, you know, once life, it's a great opportunity to see what people make. It's amazing what people can make in miniature.
So as a needleworker who makes rugs and wall hangings and whatever for dollhouses, what role do you play? What do you do? Do you have an exhibit there, or do you teach, or what do you do?
I do exhibit my work, and I do teach too.
Okay.
Both. I enjoy sharing what I learned in making needlework. I enjoy sharing a lot, and I have my classes, and I exhibit and sell my work too.
So you teach people how to make miniature needlework then at the show?
Yes.
Okay.
So last week I had a class in Petit Point and miniature. I had 6 students, and I showed them how to work on silk gauze, what stitches to use. I shared some tips on how to finish the pillows. Yep, it was interesting.
Okay, finish a pillow.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That stopped me right there.
I have a hard enough time finishing a pillow that's, you know, a normal size pillow. But something that tiny that goes in a dollhouse, I can't imagine.
It's just, you know, we use the same thread that is used for real needlework. We use the same needles. It's just a little bit smaller. And this is it.
Okay, let's back this up then. All right, so we're making needlework for dollhouses, but now mm-hmm. we have to have it to scale. Is there a single standard scale for dollhouses, or is it like model railroads where there are two or three different scales?
There are different scales. We work in 1/12 scale. It's 1 foot to 1 inch. Then some people love 1/4 scale, half scale. People work even smaller than 1/12 scale. Hmm. Even smaller, yeah. And you can do needlework in 1/4 and 1/2 scale too.
Holy smokes.
So, yeah. It will be, for example, if we make pillow 1 inch square, so in 1/4 scale, it will be 1/4 inch pillow.
There, Beth, finish that.
No. It just makes my mind hurt.
go buy a big bag of batting for that, Beth.
And yes,
I just can't imagine
it does exist.
It. Really? No, batting for that size exists?
Yes, it does.
Wow.
Because you wouldn't use normal, like what I would, like a fiber fill, which is what I, you know.
Yeah, what they do, they take probably print and they scale to the scale and they okay. print on fabric and then cut right. and attach to the bed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
It's very interesting.
So, all right, you say you use normal threads and materials, but most of it is done on silk gauze?
Correct. There are, you know, when it comes to needlework in miniature, it all comes how good your eyes are. If you can afford, you can stitch on silk gauze. If not, people stitch on canvas. Or it's very difficult to find right now, but some people prefer to stitch on silk gauze lower counts, like 22, 30 count. It all comes to your vision.
Okay.
But yeah, mostly it's silk gauze, because silk gauze is silk canvas and it allows you to depict so many details and to make whatever you are making very, very fine to the scale.
Yeah. Because that's the thing I've seen when I've seen photos of your work and others is that there's so much detail in there. So obviously mm-hmm. you're working on a very, very fine thread count on the ground cloth.
Yes.
And what are you using for thread? Fine silks?
I prefer to work with silks. I'm not a big fan of cotton floss. And it depends on what count of silk gauze you're working on, like 40 count up to 50 count. You can use cotton floss. And it also, silk floss is very pricey nowadays. So people prefer to work with cotton floss on these counts. Unfortunately, after 50 count, cotton floss is too thick for coverage. That's why silk gauze is number one to use.
So, because then now you're down to some pretty fine silks, yeah.
Yes. And those who like to stitch on a fine count of silk gauze, we're struggling with finding that manufacturer who actually produces very, very fine silk gauze because it's not in a big demand.
Right, right. So, all right. Is this world of these miniatures the same as we find for regular needlework where there's people designing charts and publishing them and selling them and... Or is it done mostly with kits, or how does that function?
Well, we have in our miniature world designers who do design the patterns,
mm-hmm.
make their own designs, or we do reproduce antique pieces, antique rugs, or sometimes... we use rugs, for example, as inspiration uh-huh. for a new design, for colors. It comes in kits and patterns.
Okay.
Anything just like in the real world. Yeah, we're living in our little small world.
All right, so you mentioned reproduction. So there's a whole aspect of taking old designs from houses and reproducing them.
Yes, and I can tell you that antique tapestries are very popular in our world, like millefleur tapestries.
Yeah.
With the unicorn. Those.
Yeah.
Right.
So, medieval. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, this is too much for me to take in. So then in the reproduction, we're trying to be as realistic as possible. So that leads me to conclude that in a lot of these houses, then realism down to scale is kind of the goal.
Yes, it's very important to be as close as possible to the scale.
Yeah.
Everything, when it comes to everything, even a little spoon, it has to be done in scale to look realistic.
Mm-hmm. And then do we copy the patterns, say a set of dishes or a rug or a bedspread? We're copying the pattern as closely as possible to the way it was?
Correct.
Wow.
It comes to everything, painting on the plate, making porcelain plates. Again, the thickness of porcelain plates should be to the scale as well.
Wow.
Yeah. I advise, highly recommend you to visit that show next year. You will understand what I'm talking about.
You guys must be the world's biggest consumer of magnifying glasses.
Well, when it comes to magnifying glasses, I think you're correct. I don't use any, so I can't give and advice on magnifying glasses, yes, but they are used.
Well, I can imagine. How did you get into this little world? No pun intended.
Oh, yeah. Frankly speaking, I don't remember how I was involved in dollhouse miniatures. Because at that time, I didn't have my own dollhouse. I didn't play dolls anymore. So I think it all started with needlework. Mm-hmm. And just, I like to challenge myself. I started with cross stitch. And then somewhere in internet, I saw a rug. And I believe that rug was made on 22 count canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested, what is it? And it appeared to be a dollhouse rug. And I decided to make my own dollhouse rugs. And my first dollhouse rug was made on plastic canvas.
Why not?
I still keep it. And then I moved to, I believe it was 18 count canvas. And I did cross-stitch rug, and I didn't like it because it was very stiff and hard, thick.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't remember how, but someday I heard about Silgas or read about it, and I thought, what is it? I started searching, looking for it. I found a piece of Silgas. It was so interesting. I found 40 count, and I decided to stitch on it. Hmm. Yeah, this is how. And then I found Dollhouse Miniature World, you know, step by step.
You got it sucked
very
in.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think if you try just to work on Silgas without doing cross stitch, you will be hooked on it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I was anyway. Now it's my obsession.
There's something beautiful about something so tiny. You know, the finished pieces I've seen of Silgas, they're exquisite. And I don't know what draws me to them personally, but there's something about the smallness of the scale that kind of sucks you in somehow. So how did you get, so did someone teach you how to do cross stitch, or were you self-taught?
I am self-taught. I started cross stitching only when I was 30. So I'm not one of those, you know, who start needlework in early childhood. Actually, I used to live in the north of Russia, far north, behind the Arctic Circle, and it was very cold there, so warm clothes were always in demand. At 9 years, I started knitting. I needed mittens, I needed stockings, socks, sweaters. This is what was in demand, and I worked on it. And my mom actually taught me to knit.
Okay.
But then when I came here and I had a family, my husband doesn't like wearing knitted sweaters. My son didn't. So there was no demand in knitting. And I thought, what am I going to do at evenings? I can't just sit and do nothing. I started looking for different kinds of needlework. And yeah, I started stitching. I brought with me a piece, one pattern, and I did cross stitch. So just the way how I felt, like I never did cross stitch before. So I never finished that piece, but I keep it still.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you, like for me, I'm the same way. I can't just, I have to be extraordinarily tired and just sit. I need to stitch, you know, do something with my hands in the evening, or else it's like, oh, what am I going to do? I can't just sit here and watch TV.
I know this feeling. I need to do something.
Right.
Hard to see still.
I want to meet your husband because I can't stand wearing knitted sweaters either. So that, that's the first person I've heard of who's like, yeah, I can't deal with him. I hate him. So, yeah. All right. He's my new hero.
Okay. I'll tell him that.
Yeah. So that was, in terms of clothing then, when you lived in northern Russia, then that was a way of life to make it. And then now it's, you know, I got to do something with my hands because that just was ingrained in you from a childhood then.
Correct. I probably brought it from my childhood that a piece that I finish has to have some purpose. I can't stitch or work on something without knowing what I'm going to do with it. I can't just put it on the wall, you know. It doesn't work with me. I always think, what am I going to do with it? I guess it's more about stitching progress for me than what am I going to do with the finished project. Mm-hmm. So when I started cross-stitching, I stitched a lot of pictures. I don't know even how to call them. I didn't know what to do with them, you know. So
well, you're not alone there. There's all kinds of people with stacks of those that they don't know what to do with. So
it's all about the process.
That's right. Yeah. So you taught yourself cross stitch. Then how did you do when you saw what other people did? Did you find that you pretty much figured it out yourself?
Well, after I worked on my first cross-stitch piece and then I saw somebody's pieces, I tried to master my skills. And then I actually, and it was only the idea how to challenge yourself, how to reach that level as other stitches do. And this is it. When I reached it and I looked at my backside and I thought, that looks nice. I lost interest because I reached that.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, it was not interesting for me anymore to do cross stitch because I needed something more complicated, I guess. And I learned petit point.
So that was the progression. You needed a challenge then. Oh.
Yes, it was. Then when I started petit point, I worked on a 48 count and design was reproduced from an antique Chinese rug. It was only, I believe, 3 or 4 colors there, but that and rug measured 6 by 8 inches and it was a learning curve for me. I learned so much about myself, about what to do and not to do from that piece. It was a lot of mistakes made, but I loved it.
Well, we just commented the other day about your EGA, the piece you won an award in at EGA, mm-hmm. where they judged the back side and couldn't tell the difference. And that's still one of the great stories, is your backside is so clean that people think that's the front side. And
thank you.
I mean, that's it had to have been incredibly frustrating that they didn't judge the right side. But then at least from my perspective, boy, I'd have been so proud. Yeah, you can't tell the difference. Yay. So that, you know, and that's the other thing is you still do what we would call regular size needlework.
Regular, yeah, we call it real size, real world.
Oh, man. Now, which do you prefer? Is it the dollhouse scale stuff that you prefer to do or regular, or it's whatever challenges you?
You know, for relaxation, to change the atmosphere, I do real size needlework too. And my favorite, I actually tried each type of needlework and it all comes if I like it or not. You know, I tried bobbin lace. I tried needle lace, ribbon embroidery, white work, beading, everything. It's just at some point I understand I don't like it or it doesn't call my name. For example, I have absolutely hard time to do crocheting. I know the principle stitches, but I can't do it. No, I can't, unfortunately, because I admire a lot what miniaturists do with the crochet. They do little tiny animals that just sits on your nail, you know. It's incredible what they're doing. Little napkins, pillows, just amazing. Just amazing. Needlework in the miniature is amazing for me. So if to talk about real needlework, my favorite, I would say, is stamp work, gold work, and needle lace. And I work on it, resting from petted point.
So those are the ones you see, those to me are a little bit more difficult of techniques. Like when I think of stump work or the needle lace, especially, you know, you're creating forms with the stump work. And to me, it's interesting that that's a relaxation for you to move from a tiny pieces to like a stump work piece. That's just fascinating.
It is. Yeah. And actually, in miniature, you can recreate any kind of needlework as well. There are artists who work, who does bobbin lace in miniature. Canvas work.
Okay, wait a minute. I'm picturing bobbin lace for dollhouses.
Yes.
I'm just trying to picture the little sticks of thread. Oh, jeez.
They are called insect pins, very fine needles that I used in miniature bobbin lace. And it's amazing. There is a lady, I believe she's in Spain, and she does incredible work, just incredible. Thousands of those little needles and thread goes around. It's so beautiful. Just watch the process. It's not about the finished napkin. It's about, you know, the process, how she does it. This is what is more exciting. It's amazing.
Now, see, Beth, remember, Beth, we were talking about how after 5+ years of doing shows about needlework, and we still haven't covered everything, and now we discover we can use insect pins to do bobbin lace for dollhouses. Oh,
I know.
True.
I know. That's just mind-blowing. And I can't imagine the size of the thread, because like we're using Swasserfine on 56 count linen right now, and that's fine. But so what, I wonder what is she used for doing the bobbin lace? I mean, is it like a sewing thread?
Sewing thread, silk thread, yeah.
Wow. That was tiny.
It is, and it's very fine, very fine. Doesn't have any weight.
Wow. Mind-blowing. That's just, I can't even comprehend that. And just to, I mean, I think with bobbin lace, just to keep track of regular-sized sticks or whatever, I'm sure there's an official term for them, but then to have insect pins, and I can't even imagine that. Jeez.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Do you have a dollhouse? I got to get back to the dollhouse. I got to learn more. Do you now have a dollhouse, or still no interest in that, just would rather knit stitches and stuff?
You know, I have two dollhouses. I have one is a farmhouse and another is a Victorian house, and they both are not finished. It's like ongoing process. Once you finish a room, maybe a month later you don't like it anymore, you have to change it. Colors or the whole, you know, just like in the real world, I like to change everything in the house, move furniture back and forth, the same as dollhouse.
Yeah, I relate to that. Yeah, Margaret mentioned just the other day how she'd like to adjust something that we already did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that carries right through all the way to dollhouses. Well, that's the real comfort. Thank you.
And I figured you'd get a room set in that dollhouse the way you liked it, and you'd be done, and it would be set. But so no, you change it as, you know, as the mood strikes you.
Correct, constantly.
I guess it gives you, so you have new projects you can make to add to your house then too. That's a good thing. So that way you have a way to use them.
True.
Yeah. You can see in with needlework, changing rooms like that just with needlework, rugs and pillows and wall hangings. You could have a great deal of fun redecorating rooms just with needlework.
That's true, but some people, they don't like to carry needlework in their dollhouses, so they maybe rearrange flowers or change the furniture.
What a world. What a world.
Do you have dollhouse?
No. My daughter has the one that I made for her when she was a child. She's, 40-some years old now, so she still has it.
Good.
Yeah, no, it was when we moved from Illinois last year. That was in the crawl space, all wrapped up, and we asked if she wanted it, and by golly, she did. Figured she'd say no, throw it away, because you know it's just a cheap kit. But then I painted it and put up some wallpaper, and we bought some furniture and other things. And she wanted it, and because there was these little, the roof. I'll never forget doing the roof because it was. Like a scallop shingled roof, and I had to put every one of those things on. Took me forever, and I had to do it after she went to bed because it was a Christmas gift. Oh. So, and it was in a basement in our first house that was cold. So I'm doing it in October and November, and early December, and scrambling to get done before Christmas. But yeah, you know, it would be get that kid to bed. I got to glue some things together. Because if you didn't, she'd wander down. What's that? And then the whole thing.
Sure.
But never thought of needlework. Now you got me thinking about, because we kept all the furniture and everything, and she has it in her house now.
Mm-hmm.
You got me thinking of making a rug or something for her. That'd be kind of fun.
Well, that would be fun. Yeah. Absolutely.
Dress it up a bit.
Pillows. Yeah.
If Beth will finish them, I'll do pillows if Beth will finish them.
No, I am not finishing your pillows. You're on your own, Mary. On your own.
Christmas is coming. Christmas stockings.
No. Oh, yeah. No.
No.
Yeah, that's what you need. Little Christmas stockings hanging on there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, for her, her husband, and her kids.
True. Yeah.
And I didn't ever, I think we had a dollhouse when I was a child, but I have no clue what happened to it. And it was I'm sure I shared it with my sister, but it's long.
It's never, it's never late to build another one.
This is true. But right now I'm building a shed. I get my shed built, then we'll worry about a dollhouse.
Then you can create a reproduction of your shed in miniature.
Right, right.
There, Beth. Get on it, Beth. Let's go. So, Natalia, now you also have then a business to sell supplies. Tell us how'd you get started on that? Is it just I needed a source for stuff, so I'll start my own business?
You know how it started? It started with the floss, with the silk floss. I used to live in Spokane, Washington State, and we had only one needlework, and it was very convenient and comfortable. I used to use, and I love a lot to use, Gloriana threads, silk thread. And I always, when it was time for me to stitch a rug, I always went to that store because she carried the whole line. And I saw all colors, so it was easy for me to choose what colors to buy. And then she closed her store.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it's very difficult to choose the colors when online. So this is how it started, you know. I had to buy the whole brand of Gloriana thread Yeah, in order for me to choose the colors for my next project. And actually, it was Tree of Life. It was this one.
Yeah.
Rug that I brought last year to the seminar.
Uh-huh.
It was that rug. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then seal gauze, you know, at some point, seal gauze disappeared from the market and it was very difficult to find it.
Uh-huh.
So right. I had to have variety to choose from, you know. This is how it started. I don't like to be limited in my choices. If I want to stitch today on 60 count, I have to have it now.
a woman after my own heart.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's interesting, too, is that I didn't realize silk gauze was available in such fine counts. So how high can we go with thread count?
Well, right now I have the highest count for available for sale is 120.
Holy smokes. 120 count and you can stitch on it?
120. And I have 140 and 150
wow.
counts. That's very difficult to even see the holes, you know. It doesn't look like canvas at all. But, yeah.
So what do you use for threads on such a high count?
Silk.
okay, but like Gloriana, I would think that would be too thick. I know they have like a Tudor.
And here Gloriana. It all comes to our creativity, you know. You
okay.
just, when on 90 count, you still can find the silk floss that you can use. When it comes to higher than 90 count, you have to split that silk. For example, I use Chinese mulberry silk. You know, okay. that flat Chinese silk that.
Yes.
Yeah. And you can split it almost to the thickness of your hair, that thin. It's just
okay.
when you use it, you need to be very careful and maybe cut short that it doesn't break while you're stitching.
Okay. All right.
This is,
that makes
yeah.
sense. So you're using really short lengths of the Chinese mm-hmm. silk and you're splitting it even so it's super super fine. Okay.
Super super.
Wow.
That makes sense.
Yeah, you have to see it. It's one way just to describe it, but you have to see it and better to experience it. Do it yourself. To appreciate, to understand what actually is put into it.
Right, right. And because I find the Chinese flat silk very difficult to work with anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, because if it catches on my hands, it tends to, no matter what I do, it just, I have problems with it being very fly away. So I can
very
imagine.
Difficult, mm-hmm. Very difficult to handle this thread, but you just work through fingers, you know, constantly to try to smooth the thread and apply lotion before you work with it. I use Akifis cream.
Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. a lot because it, and I work on my hands. I mean, I prepare my hands' skin before I start working with this thread.
So there's a whole process of preparation before you can even stitch, just so you don't snag the threads. Wow.
Absolutely. You first wash your hands, that they have to be clean because oil on our hands goes to seal gauze, you know.
Right.
And
right.
we try to avoid it. So then you put lotion, and gladly this Akifis cream doesn't leave the residue on seal gauze. So, but it, I don't start stitching right away. I'm then wiping my hands, preparing, you know, drying. It's just, using file on the skin, you know.
Well, I was going to ask about that because I mean, I'm with you, Beth. I have that trouble all the time. And so you actually then use a fingernail file on your skin to get the little.
Yep, I do. I do file my skin, absolutely, with a fine file. Because it's very frustrating when the thread snags on your skin, very frustrating then, because you have to change it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this lotion you use is O'Keefe's?
O'Keefe's.
Yeah.
Cream, hands.
Yeah.
It comes for feet too, but I don't need it, so I use the one for hands.
Because that's the one that Debbie Raleigh uses. That's what she recommends is O'Keefe's.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's another one to try. And I'm terribly, because I'm a gardener, so my nails are always have little. So I always have to go through and say, okay, what are my nails looking like? Because I garden, I don't do pedicures, and I have to make sure that they don't have any little rough spots on them. So I'm sure you have to do the same. I don't know if you garden or not, but you probably have to do the same thing with your nails, because that's the other place it'll catch. I'll think, oh, they're fine. And then I'll like be pulling a thread and it'll catch in my nail even.
That's true too. No. I actually don't like nails when I stitch. For some reason, they're on my way.
We got to do a whole show on manicuring, Beth.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, long nails or short nails. Yeah.
Right.
What files do you use to file your skin smooth? Yes.
and what do you need to do before? Because if you're using silks a lot, like if I'm doing a lot of gardening and my hands are very rough, I will, you know, use like some sort of scrub on my hand in the evening before I go to bed, and then put something very greasy lotion on to soften them, so that way when we stitch the next day, they're not rough. And I don't know. I'm thinking if with using the silk gauze like you do, you probably need to do something like that too, depending on how rough your hands get.
Well, sometimes. And don't laugh, okay? I sleep in gloves.
No,
I have special gloves, and I apply my lotion cream, and I sleep in these gloves because it makes hands moisturized. And then in the morning, I work on my skin, and sometimes I even stitch with the gloves. I cut tops of two fingers on gloves. On right hand where I hold the needle, but I'm wearing gloves when I'm stitching. First of all, it protects the stitching from your oil and reduces the snagging of your thread.
Right. Huh. Now, see, I've heard of that wearing for people whose fingers, the skin on their fingers cracks in the winter. And I've heard of that, putting lotion on, then putting gloves on to help prevent that. So it makes perfect sense that you could do that to, you know, just soften your hands to the maximum. And, but now, so you just cut the tips off of a couple of fingers so you can handle the needle and keep the rest of it covered.
Correct. Huh.
Okay. Another thing. Yeah.
Another tip. That's great.
Because the rug that I usually stitch is big, and my side of the right hand, I can't just, I try to keep it in the air, so not to touch with my hand stitched area, because I don't want any particles of my skin, any oil on the work. So I'd rather put a glove on it to protect the stitching area. Even, you know, I put the protection on the stitching, but I don't like it because it's on my way constantly, that paper making noise. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Why don't you just put down? Because, like, I have old 100% cotton handkerchiefs.
Mm-hmm.
And I lay those down over the stitched area just to keep my hands from touching it. So, but the gloves are the same difference, just a different way to apply the same principle. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I don't finish, I cover, of course, the stitched surface with the cotton, you know.
Right.
I protect it from dust and the light. But when I stitch, I prefer to see the whole picture while I'm working.
Oh, okay. All right. Now I got to ask, what do you mm-hmm. use for needles?
Real needles. Needles from real world. Well, here you can't, I mean, for stitching the same needles, yeah, for different counts, different needles.
But you must be down very, very fine beading needles, I would think, with some of that higher
correct.
Count.
Correct. Oh, my. For the higher count, we use 15 size beading needles. I think there is no finer needles in the world but 15 size. I might be wrong, but I searched. I couldn't find any.
Hmm.
It's the needle. It's the needle, and it's long, and it's not very comfortable to use because it's bending constantly.
That's what I was just thinking. Beth, you'd have it in a knot before you got started.
I tend to bend needles, so yes. Anyway, yeah. Without even trying, so.
I do too.
How do you thread those things?
With the threader. Special thing.
Holy smokes. You know, that's, I mean, it's, you just got me thinking here. All right, we've got a needle that's so fine you can barely hold it. And then that means there has to be an eye that thread can pass through. But then you got to have a threader that's fine enough to go in the eye and pull thread through it. I mean, mm-hmm. at some point, the dimensions just get ridiculous.
Yeah.
Jeez. And so all of this, I can see if you're going to do this work, why you'd end up with a business is just to have that stuff available, because that's certainly not equipment or materials that normal shops would carry.
True.
Yeah.
This is true, because I can go to the local store and ask 15 size needlework needles. You know, as I said, I prefer to have it right now if I need it. Available for me anytime, because I don't know what comes in my mind next minute.
So do you work on multiple projects at the same time, or are you a single project stitcher?
No way. No, I can't be stuck with one project. First of all, I am a generator of ideas. You know, I can make, I do have so many ideas in my head that I want to make true. And yeah. It's very exciting to start a new project. That's why probably I have. And from another hand, when you work on a big rug, sometimes I wouldn't say tired, I wouldn't use this word, but sometimes you need some variety, some, you know, so I moved to another project doing little pillow, maybe Christmas stocking, or starting another rug. And after having some rest from that rug, first one, I'm going back to it and keep working with fresh ideas.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
Now, do you generate mm-hmm. designs for that you sell, or is it just what you stitch?
Designs to sell?
Yeah, do you create designs that others can buy?
I do design the designs to sell, and I don't have enough hours in a day to stitch myself all designs. So sometimes I sell patterns or kits that are not finished.
Mm-hmm. And reproduction or original or both?
Both. Both.
And what 2 hours of the day do you eat and sleep? Holy smokes. Wow.
Well, like in me, I don't sleep too much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, lucky you.
Like in me.
Oh, boy. So is it... what is the dominant part of your business then? Is it the dollhouse materials that is the majority of your work, or is it just Petit Point and just fine needlework in general?
It's needlework. Needlework, Petit Point. Petit Point is my passion. My working day starts at 4:30 in the morning. I get up. I have a cup of coffee. I wake up. If you can call it, then at 5 o'clock, I sit down and I start stitching. While it's peaceful, quiet, and I can count without making a mistake, I stitch. Then I have a break. Then my family gets up and all that routine, and then I go back to stitch. So I stitch about 6-8 hours each day. This is my working hours.
I'm jealous.
Jealous?
I can't get 6 or 8 hours in a week, and you do it in a day. That's, yeah. So that, and those morning hours, yeah. I ride a bike in the morning just for that same thing. It's so peaceful. Yep. You can accomplish a lot.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this year was this the first year you went to the needlework, expo in Nashville?
Yes, it was my first Nashville show, and I was not ready for it. I received the notification message maybe a month before, but I decided not to lose this opportunity. I really wanted to go there, and I don't regret.
So did you go as a shop, or did you
go
as a designer?
I went both.
Oh,
yeah. I brought my patterns, kits, seal gauze, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I shopped too.
I shopped for
linen. Yeah, because I started to reproduce antique samplers. I have a huge collection of antique samplers, and I thought, why only me admiring them? And I decided to stitch them. I thought I would never go back to cross stitch after Petit Point, you know. But I am back cross stitching.
So on top of all this, then you collect reproduction samplers, and now you're reproducing them.
Yes.
Oh boy, what fun!
It is. I couldn't understand first why people are so crazy about antique samplers, you know, till I saw one. And then it's kind of like I had a light in my head, you know. It's very interesting to be a part of history, to hold that piece in your hand, to think who was stitching it, how old, what the family was, what they talked about, what they did. It's like the whole book in your hand. It's amazing.
Now, the samplers you buy, you buy them from a certain time period or certain parts of the world, or just whatever comes up that you like?
For some reason, I am leaning towards more samplers that are made in 18th century.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Late, whatever I can find, but it has to be dated, started with 1-7, and then whatever. And I like the, I don't know why I can't explain it, the girls who are very young, you know, like 6 years, 7 years, 9 years. I think it's the most incredible things that I'm trying to understand, how being 6 years, that little girl could accomplish that much.
Yeah.
Finish that sampler to have that neat background, you know. It just blows my mind. Absolutely. Yeah. I like Victorian samplers too. I like maybe for the color, for the flowers, animals.
Mm-hmm.
That I on those samplers, I collect old antique patterns, Berlin, you know, those painted patterns.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I like that era.
Well, you're never bored. We can tell
never.
Right now. Never bored. Nope. Nope. All right, Natalia, thanks so much. Wow, we've learned so many things here, and now I got to digest it all. That was fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate a lot for inviting me.
Thank you so much, Natalia.
Yep, thanks to everyone for listening.